We're continuing our tech phone-in with Fevzi Turkalp, and we've already been talking about spam emails, antivirus software, and dodgy Wi-Fi signals. And Fevzi is going to be here for another half an hour. So if you've got any questions, no matter how complicated or how simple, he'll try and find the answer to them. You can get in touch with us 0500 909 693 if you want to give us a call, or you can send us a text 85058, or on social media, it's at BBC5Live. So, Fevzi, let's crack on with some more calls, see if you can solve some more people's problems for them. We've got Jean on the line. Good morning, Jean.
Yes, good morning, boss.
Good morning, Jean. What's the problem then this morning?
Yes, I have just purchased an Echo Dot, and I find it's absolutely fantastic because as a blind person, I don't have to worry about looking things up. I can just ask Alexa. However, I would love to know if in time you can have recipes on Echo Dot, because that's one thing I'd love to be able to do in the kitchen when I think of a recipe and I forget what the measurements are.
Yep.
If I could ask Alexa, it would be fantastic.
I believe it can already do that. So the way the Echo Dot and Echo systems work is on the basis of skills. So they have capabilities known as skills. Some of those are built in and switched on by default. Others can be selected by using the app on a smartphone or tablet or even on a PC. And I think that there is more than one famous chef who has made available recipes.
Right.
So yes, it is possible.
Yeah, it's just that I don't possess a smartphone, so my son has set it up through his.
Yeah.
So it's a case of knowing what's available.
Yeah.
To ask him to set up the relevant app for me.
Yeah. Well, I think Jamie has a set of recipes on there, if I'm not mistaken. So Jamie Oliver,
my favourite chef.
Yeah. So he's been quite innovative in making his sort of content available on various electronic platforms. And I will check.
Sorry. What about BBC? Does it have recipes?
It's a very good question, Carissa.
I don't know. I don't know the answer.
I don't know either. And the thing about this, Jean, is, you know, and it's a shame you don't have direct access yourself, because this platform, this Echo platform, has really taken off. Although, you know, others have had, you know, Siri and what have you for a long time, and Echo is relatively new. It's in this country, it's very new, but it's about 2 years old in the States. It's really taken off in terms of what you can do with it. And every week there are new things. And you can sign up with Amazon for an email from them as a Echo owner, and it will tell you, you'll send you an email once a week with all the new things that have come on every week. So recipes are definitely there. Conversion programs of weights and measures are also there as well. Also, one thing that may be of interest to you is that what was really interesting is a couple of weeks back we had the CES show in Las Vegas, which is the world's biggest consumer electronics show. And there was virtually every sort of household appliance was available, being controlled from the voice interface of the Echo. So everything, you know, from lights to fridges to I think one manufacturer, it was Ford, built it into one of their cars, so you no longer had an ignition switch. You had that. So it's a really exciting platform. Yes, there are competitors from Google, and no doubt Apple will come into the fray at some point as well. However, it's very, very much a dynamic situation. So what's available this week will be certainly added to each and every week for a long time to come. So I would suggest maybe getting some help, maybe signing up for that email if you're not already in receipt of it.
I think my son receives the emails, but you know what it is with your children. They're so busy, they forget to tell you what's going on.
Okay, well, far be it for me to recommend a slap across the knuckles. But
yeah. I do have a laptop, and I use Guide, which is text-to-speech. I wonder if I would be able to go through myself and find out through my Guide program.
Yeah, you should be able to. I mean, the other thing you can do is you can actually ring Amazon and get help. You know, it's not widely known, but Amazon do have a telephone helpline.
Right.
And you can speak to them, and they're usually pretty helpful, and they'll have a dedicated team to deal with Echo-based inquiries.
A bit of a search online, Jean's told me that there's around 60,000 recipes that you can get through your Echo,
wonderful.
So they will be there.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. I mean, right. So I've just got to get my son to get his act together and set up the app for me. Yes,
tell him that if he does it, then you'll cook him the food.
Yes.
That's a good way around
suggest
it.
Suggest that he activates some of the time management functions as well, so he makes time for his mum. But, you know, really there is so much there. And, you know, I don't know if you've used, for example, the sort of the organizer capabilities, the ability to add things not only to shopping lists but lists of things to do, the ability to set reminders, you know, at certain times and at certain intervals by voice.
Yes, I have the shopping list on, which is useful because my son gets it on his phone and then he can just pop into the shop and he knows what to buy for me.
Yeah. Also, I use mine, I don't know if it's of interest to you, but I use mine quite a lot for reading audiobooks. So you can download, you know, Audible books. And listen to those. One thing that's not yet working on Echo in the UK, but it's working in America, is text-to-speech for ebooks. So audiobooks it'll do. So if you download a talking book from Audible, for example, it will happily read those to you. And it does a very good job because it synchronizes it across devices. So let's say you've got it reading to you on a tablet or a computer, and then you go into another room and you pick up the thread with the Echo, it will resume from where you left off, which I find very helpful. But in America, the American Echoes can take the ebooks, like the Kindle ebooks, and read them in a mechanical voice, but still an intelligible one. It'll do text to speech. In the UK, it doesn't do that yet. I've spoken to Amazon. They say it is coming. It's not a technical issue here. It's a rights issue. They've got to do the deal with the publishers in the UK for the books to have the right to do that. But that will come as well. And when that comes, I think that'll be a boon for all sorts of users of the devices.
Definitely. So, yeah, Jean, get talking to your son and get that skill activated. I think definitely food is a good way to get him to do that for you. We've got another caller, Fevzi, John, who's in North London. John, this is a problem that I definitely resonate with. Well, how can Fevzi help this morning?
Well, it's very similar. Actually, very interesting the last hour or so of the show, I must say. It's really interesting stuff you had on. Very similar problem, really. Had my birthday before Christmas. Thought it's time to buy a new phone. So I bought a new phone, possibly guessing or knowing that I was going to get a Christmas present in the form of an Amazon Echo.
Yeah.
Now, sure enough, we get an Amazon Echo for Christmas.
Yes.
In order to set this thing up, you need an app. Now, two problems. One is the Echo didn't have a manual with it, so there's no way of reading through and seeing what you have to do to set the thing up. Neither did the phone, so I had to go and buy a manual, a full manual, for this phone, only to discover that it possibly won't support an app. I'm not 100% sure about that because it will do emails if I set that up in some way or other. It will do text, obviously. It does everything my old phone does. It's the same manufacturer, so I know how the phone works. But when it says internet, it says 3G. It's got on the various pages that if you use 3G, it'll be expensive if you use all your data on your contract or whatever. Whether this will use Wi-Fi, I don't know. Whether the Amazon Echo, you can move from room to room, I'll assume, once I've got it set up. I'm hoping that you can. My wife's got an iPad. My son and daughter have got iPads. They've got iPad minis.
Yeah.
Can't set the the app up on those because my son decided, only being 10 years old, that he would have a look whilst Mummy was putting the password in. So she had to quickly change it, and in the process of doing that, she'd forgotten what the new password is. Now we're locked out of the App Store, because without possibly going into the factory settings and resetting the whole thing,
yes,
we can't get into anything. And, of course, there's no manual with that either, to be able to look up and see what to do.
Yes.
So I think the last resort is me having to go out and buying an iPad of my own.
No, no, you don't need to spend more money on this. Get the iPad working. So Apple have got a tech supporter called AppleCare, and even if it's outside warranty, if you ring up the AppleCare number, which is on the apple.com website, you will find that they are quite helpful. They will explain to you your options and what that will mean, and whether you need to completely wipe the machines and you know, lose the data that you had on it. But frankly, you know, I mean, was there something very valuable on the iPad in terms of data?
Well, there isn't. No, I mean, the other thing is that it's full anyway, and we can't take off some of the games because we can't put the iPad on here.
So you need to re-establish access to the store and to the iPad. You need to be able to do a spring clean, and don't forget, if you delete apps or that you've previously downloaded from a device, they're still there for you on your account to download whenever you wish in the future, maybe when you have space on it, or when you get a new Apple device with more capacity. So, you know, just deleting it off there to make some space won't lose you anything. But my advice to you is don't go out and buy a new one at this point. All you really need to do is get that iPad up and running again with help from AppleCare, and they will talk you through it and see what's possible and how to do it with the minimal disruption. You may end up losing the contents of the iPad, but the apps you'll be able to re-download. What you may lose is any photos or any original content on there that you've put on it. So just have a think about what was on it. You may even be able to back it up, but it really depends on exactly how it's been locked. The other thing is, what's the smartphone that you've got there, John?
Well, I got I had a Doro because it's got buttons on it. I hate these screen ones, which you have to press them. My fingers are too big to go on the numbers or whatever. I actually went out and bought. I had to get a new phone anyway, so I got a Doro EasyPhone 632. Now, whether you can put apps on here, I haven't managed to work out yet through the manual that I got. I thought you should be able to. It's got internet. It says there is internet access, and there must be some access because this phone's got a GPS compass in it, sort of find your way thing. It picks up the weather from somewhere. It gives you the basic weather forecast for the week ahead in your area. So there must be some way. Whether it's doing that on the 3G, I don't know. Whether there's some way of connecting it to Wi-Fi, I couldn't really see in the manual, the 60-odd page manual, how to go about doing it, if it is possible on this particular model.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. I mean, I am familiar with the Doro range. Where they have smartphone capability, although they have their own special software on top, which makes it easier to use, particularly for those that aren't, you know, very technically expert, the underlying operating system on those devices is Android, and as such you can load Android apps on it, and certainly then you could do it that way. It looks like you're going to have, you know, quite a lot of work there. I mean, looking here, it says it's got email. Just looking at trying to see if
there's voice messaging and some sort of voice messaging, email, SMS, MMS, whatever that is. I think that's sending pictures, isn't
it? Multimedia messaging, yeah. So that's text with pictures or sound attached to it as well. Look, I think it may be possible with that particular Doro, but I think the way to go is to get that iPad working and, you know, not worry. I mean, when you had the iPad working before, or your wife had it working before, were you connecting to the internet via Wi-Fi at home, or were you connecting?
We did. My wife bought a new laptop. Well, she bought a laptop as opposed to a desktop PC last year. We're going through major technical upgrades here. The new laptop she bought so that she can use it in the rest of the house, we actually got some booster, the things you plug into the electric mains, which will boost the signal around the house,
yeah, I understand.
If you like.
Yeah.
So that's helped.
Okay. And so, how old's the iPad? Sorry to interrupt you. Is it about 3-4 years old? Or?
I suppose they're getting on for 2 or 3 years old, I would have thought. Yeah,
okay.
they're iPad minis, yeah.
2-3 years is not too bad. I mean, I've got a first generation iPad mini, which is just over 4 years old, and it's still just about, you know, useful. Although, you know, I can't run the latest version of the operating software on it. That, you know, there are still uses to it. So I think the way I would go at this, the order in which I'd go at it, John, is to get that iPad up and running again, because you want that anyway. Yeah, that's an iPad mini. It's a lovely little tablet, even if it's, you know, a few years old. Get that running, do a bit of spring cleaning, delete off the things that you don't absolutely have to have on there, and then run it that way. Also, if you speak to Amazon, they can advise you of how else you can do it. It may be possible to do it through Windows, although I have not done that myself. I've always used the app. But you should just be aware that if you've got a desktop computer or a laptop, it may be possible to get to all the settings in that way as well.
But get the iPad up and running first.
Yeah,
we think that's the best plan.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you can get all that done, John, and keep it away from the 10-year-old so they don't try and put the password in again. Let's get another caller on. James in Hackney. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Good morning. What was it that Fevzi could help you with this morning?
Well, basically, it's rather unusual. I mean, I started programming computers in 1964.
Right.
And
which language, or was it assembler?
That was in Fortran in those days.
Oh, okay.
And in that time, in the intervening years, I was extremely successful. I sold one company for $128 million in the 1980s. And anyway, what happened in 2010, I had a very bad year. I lost my wife and son to cancer. My son used to help me with hardware, and I had a bad stroke.
I'm sorry.
Now, what has happened? I mean, so hardware to me is a complete... No. I just never got involved with it. I always found somebody to do with it.
Yes.
Now, people just don't understand how little I know about hardware. So, for instance, I recently bought a set of headphones. I thought I might like to listen to Radio 5 on my mobile phone.
Yes.
And I can't even work out how to use them. And what I need is a sort of book which actually, and because I've only really started since the stroke, you know, really getting serious in the last year or so. I mean, I blog a lot, and I blog about my travels and things like that. But that's all desktop, well, effectively laptop stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. So what is it that you specifically want to learn about
hardware?
I'd like
a sort of a nice book which actually explains all the last 10 years and explains how to use, you know, things like... I mean, I've started to use the odd app, but I wouldn't use any app with money on it because, basically, I have worked in... with Arthur Anderson on security, and I just don't believe that putting your credit card details on a phone is safe, and never will be.
I mean, it's quite interesting. I mean, just on briefly on that point, I mean, if you look at a technology like Apple Pay, on the face of it, it's more secure than the card that you load into it. And the reason for that is that when you make a normal transaction on a credit or a debit card, the vendor that you're trading with gets your details. Yeah, by virtue of the way the transaction works, they get your card details, your address, and full name, and so forth. With something like Apple Pay, so what you do there is
But it's a real program, and you don't use Apple products.
Well, there is that as well. But let me just explain to you
the argument, but basically, I mean, I tend to use contactless anyway because I've actually been in touch with one of the big credit card providers, their security department, because when I started using contactless, we had a rather strange problem.
Yeah.
I won't say what the problem was, but it didn't cost me any money. It didn't cost them any money, but it cost the retailer some money.
I understand. Well, okay, so you've asked about a book. I'm not aware of a book that will cover such a wide range. I think if you have a working browser, probably the internet is probably, you know, Google is our friend. It's probably wiser just to look for guides, search for certain keywords for, you know, basic hardware guides on particular types of hardware. Because if you just say everything in the last 10 years, you're talking about a very wide range of types of devices. So you could look at, you could look into smartphones and so forth. Or the other way to go at it, I suggest, would be to try and research the answers to individual problems. Again, you know, you could either Google, or you can, if you're on Twitter, you can send me at Gadget Detective a message. I'll try and assist you that way. But you know, there won't be a single book that will cover everything that you want. And the problem with books and this sort of thing is that they become out of date very quickly.
I was going to say, surely they date pretty quickly.
Yeah, and therefore they tend not to publish them so much these days, particularly because of the subject matter. People tend to go for, you know, online guides, which are at least kept reasonably up to date. So you need to just try and find some reputable guides. And, you know, even things like Wikipedia for the expert, you know, basic explanation of certain technologies can help as well. So you might learn, if you don't know, for example, how, you know, Bluetooth works and what, you know, what it was designed for, what it's now capable of, and learn the generics. You can then look at operating manuals for specific pieces of hardware and see if, you know, that will, for example, help you to connect those headphones to that particular smartphone or telephone. Yeah. So I think that would be the approach I would take. And in the beginning, it's a little bit slow and a little bit daunting and a little bit hit and miss, but over time you will develop knowledge of some trusted websites that have the sort of information that you're looking for. I'd also suggest, you mentioned you blog yourself, I suggest that you look at some websites which aren't just published guides, but places you can go and ask questions. You know, and there are so many of those, you can just try and again see where you get the best responses. And it is a learning experience, but the benefit of learning that way is that you've then got the knowledge to find out anything else you need to know in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that would be the way I would go at it, to actually develop those research skills online if you haven't already got them.
There you go, James. Off you go with those. Let's try and squeeze in one or two more just before the news. Mark's text in saying, I'm trying to uninstall Skype from my laptop. When I try it, it says the program's being used somewhere else and that's it. Since I installed Skype, the laptop runs like a sack of potatoes. And Microsoft's stopping me from uninstalling it because they own it.
Well, yes, they do own it. It shouldn't stop you from uninstalling it. It's sometimes the case that programs run in the background, so though you're not aware of running them, it may be set up to run as soon as you power up your machine. The way to get around that, Mark, I'm assuming you're using a Windows computer, is to start the computer up in what's called safe mode, which, depending on the version you're running, it could be the tapping the F8 key every couple of seconds as you switch on the computer. So safe mode is a basic diagnostic mode of Windows that doesn't start up anything that isn't strictly necessary for Windows to run. So it's the most basic form of Windows, and the graphics look like something out of Fisher-Price. They're sort of big and chunky and garish. But, but the benefit of that is that then Skype will definitely not be running in the background. The other thing that you could do, if you don't want to go that way, is to fire up the process manager, Control-Alt-Del on most versions of the operating system, find the process that relates to Skype and kill it manually. Stop it, you know, just stop it running. That's not always a great thing to do, particularly if you accidentally kill a part of the Windows operating system. You can crash the whole operating system. But if you can correctly identify the Skype process, that will do it. And then once you've done that, you'll be able to uninstall it in the usual way.
Thank you very much, Fevzi. We are out of time, but thank you very much for all of your help in answering all of our tech questions.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.